This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey everyone, Jason Cutter here. Welcome to another special guest series on the Authentic Persuasion Show. I am super excited, as always, to have another professional sales educator on the program to share with everybody. As you know, my personal mission is to help fill the world with authentic persuaders. The focus and goal of this show is to help you as a sales professional, as a leader, as a business owner, to close more deals and make more money and do it in a way that's authentic for you and is of service to other people and is actually doing things the way that those potential buyers, your customers want and what they're looking for most. So hopefully you realize that if you're listening to this, you're here for a reason and there will be some value because I know this is going to be a fun one. My guest today is Dr. Riley Dugan from the University of Dayton. And in his words, he is an associate professor and chairperson of the market management and marketing department at the University of Dayton, where he teaches classes on sales negotiations and value analysis of major sales engagements. He is also, and this is fascinating, a past winner of the American Marketing Association Sales SIG Excellence in Teaching Award and routinely publishes articles in the Journal of Personal Selling and Sales Management. So he's on the publishing side and the research side. So you know that's the not necessarily opposite of me, but pretty far from me. So I can't wait for this. Dr. Riley, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure being here.
So let's take it back, which I think is always a fun place because, you know, you're doing research and you're publishing things on sales. A lot of the stuff that I read was more marketing related. How did you, you know, get started in a sales type role and what was that transition into teaching?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, Jason. So, you know, my background, professional background is primarily in accounting. So I sort of approach perhaps sales and the selling process through a slightly different lens than a lot of other professors. But so my path was kind of interesting. So, you know, I've served as a core member of Teach for America previously, right? So that was really kind of my first professional job out of college. And I did that on the Texas-Mexican border in a town called Rio Grande City. So it's a very interesting experience. And so after that, I went to grad school, right, to get my MBA because I knew I sort of wanted to transition to business because my undergraduate background had been in political science and Russian literature. And there's not a lot of jobs available with that combination, I found. And liking food and liking, you know, shelter and all those other sorts of things, I figured I'd have to do something to make some money. So I went back and I got my MBA. And so while that was happening, a very big sort of economic event was also concurrently happening in the country, and that was the Great Recession, right? So I graduated with my MBA in December of 2007, and so job prospects at that point were fairly slim for a lot of people. And I remember talking to my sister, my older sister, who's sort of an informal mentor for me in many ways, and who's also a business professor, you know, just kind of asking for advice. I'm like, oh, you know, the economy sucks right now. I've heard that, you know, people who have sort of an interest in marketing, which I did at the time, those were often the first people who were cut in times of economic difficulty because, you know, company owners and presidents and so forth figure like, oh, anyone can do that marketing stuff. It's just drawing pretty pictures and yada, yada, yada. So we'll just throw those responsibilities onto somebody else. And so I was really worried about being able to have a job after my MBA. And so my sister advised me, she says, well, do you like accounting? And I says, oh, yeah. She says, all right, I like my accounting course well enough. She's like, well, what I would do if I were in your shoes is I would stay in for another year, get a master's in accounting, because there's always a need for accounts, right? You know, because a lot of the responsibilities of accountants, particularly on the audit side, which is what I did, are sort of mandated by the SEC, right? So it's like, you can't get away with not doing it. So there's a need for someone to do it. So that's what I did. Right? So in 2008, I started at a large accounting firm in Denver, Colorado, after getting my master's in accounting. And yeah, I was always interested in marketing, right? But, you know, I kind of went toward accounting because, yeah, I was interested in it, but also just strictly for the job opportunities, right? And so I worked there for a little while, a couple of years, but, it, you know, while I was doing it, I had a couple of realizations. One, that I didn't want to maintain, be an accountant forever. I kind of wanted to get out of it as quickly as possible because, being an auditor, as I was at public companies and private companies as well, too, is not the most pleasant experience because no one wants to see you there, right? So you're always the worst news of the day for all your clients, and that sort of wears on you really quickly. The hours, particularly during busy season, are not something I would foist on my worst enemy. But I also had another realization while I was there, right? So when I was getting my accounting degree, we were sort of taught by our accounting professors that everything comes back to the financial statements, right? It's like, accounting is really the centerpiece of business. And in some respects, that's true. But what I quickly realized is if you didn't have salespeople out selling the business, whatever the product is, accountants aren't going to have anything to count, right? Because there's no money. And, if there's no money, no one has a job. And salespeople are on the front line of generating that revenue for the firm. And so we as a firm during that time were sort of struggling in attracting new clients just because, with an audit, it's a commodity product, right? The SEC sort of specifies what procedures you have to engage in. Again, no one wants one, but they get one because they have to, either because they're a publicly traded company or because their bank, as part of one of their debt covenants that you might have if you have a loan with a bank, stipulates that you have to have an audit. So, no one wants one. It's a commodity product. It's really expensive. So it's really hard to sell something like that, right? And so we were having challenges with the other firm. But I realized that, we were having people who rose through the ranks as accountants be the primary salespeople, right? So the partners of the firm who were trained as accountants were now sort of transitioning into a sales role. And those are two very different roles, right? So, there's that old joke, how can you tell an extroverted accountant? He looks at your shoes when he's talking to you, right? So, you had people like that who were selling business who weren't really trained to do so. And so I'm like, maybe it doesn't all go back to the financial statements and therefore accounting, but maybe it all starts with the selling process of sales. So while I was out there in Denver, I decided I was going to go back and get my PhD, right? So, I kind of had toyed with the idea of getting a PhD. And I'm like, I'm going to do it. And so I returned to Cincinnati, where I'm from, where I grew up, and started my PhD program at the University of Cincinnati. And, it's interesting because as educators, we always tell our students to go to where the jobs were, right? And so I'm figuring, well, maybe I should take my own advice, right? Maybe I should sort of position myself as an academic where the jobs are, where schools need professors, right? So at the University of Cincinnati, they really specialize in consumer behavior. Right. So looking at marketing through the lens of, what does the consumer think of this product? What does the consumer think of this packaging and so forth? And, there's not nearly as many jobs in that area as there is in B2B professional selling. And so schools were finally waking up to that reality and saying, maybe we need to hire some people who can teach this because all our students, all our marketing students are getting jobs in this after graduation. And even many of our students who aren't marketing students are getting their first job in B2B selling. Crazy thought, right? So I'm like, maybe I sort of position myself as a sales scholar because that's where it seems the jobs are. And so I did so and was hired at the University of Dayton in 2014. And I still, 9 years later, I'm here today. I just started as department head in January. So it's been a good ride so far and one that's been very fruitful.
So I love all of that, especially the journey of, the political science, literature, that kind of whole study and, where that actually leads to careers and jobs and where that could versus, people who are interested in it and then realize, wait, what do I do with this thing? And then going the MBA and then even shifting to accounting. And I love the stuff that you said about extroverted accountants. That's absolutely hilarious. And selling something that's really tough to sell because it is a unwanted high ticket commodity in the mind of a buyer. So what was that like in that sales role, or how were you involved in selling, or what did you see that worked, or what were you taught about sales, obviously prior to academia?
And that was the really interesting part, because had I been invited on some of those sales calls, I think I would have done fairly well. I think I can relate to a lot of different people fairly effectively, but because I was like the most junior or one of the most junior people in the company, it was not for me to do, right? And that was the real interesting part, is that you had people doing it who were doing it solely because of sort of their rank within the company, right? The higher you were within the company, more likely were to go on those sales calls, irrespective of whether you had any facility with it or not, right? So, you know, it was viewed, I think, at the firm as something like a necessary evil, right? It's like, oh yeah, well, you know, I got to do selling today, so, you know, that's what I'm going to do. We're not even going to think about, you know, who's most effective at doing that. It's just, it falls on my shoulders, and so I'm going to go ahead and do that. And so I didn't really have any, input with those sales calls. I think I wish I had, because, you know, not only would it have helped develop me professionally, but I think maybe I could have resonated with people maybe a bit better than some of the people they did have doing those calls.
Okay, so then let's fast forward, because you're not involved with sales. You're doing a bunch of things around sales, or seeing that sales is actually the first valuable engine for the business, right? Because it's generating. And I'm not a sales first, pro sales only type of person, where, you know, I don't think sales is like the golden child, like it's the god within an organization, because it's the beginning. The customer doesn't care about your departments. They want what they want, and then you have to do the thing, right? So I think all departments are important, but obviously it starts with sales. So then you get into academia and you're like, these programs don't have a sales program, and marketing people, and there's tons of stats showing like all these people that go into sales anyway, no matter what their degree is, at least that's where they start, even if they're going to ultimately end up in a marketing role. And so how do you go about getting yourself ready or teaching yourself sales so that you can then teach sales, if that makes sense?
Well, I think this sort of, you know, alludes to, you know, the title of this podcast, and that's, you know, authentic persuasion, right? Because, you know, if you've read Daniel Pink's book, To Sell as Human, what he realized is that, you know, everybody's in sales, irrespective of what it is you do for a living, because the hallmark of selling is persuasion. Right. So, you know, if I'm spending my weekend with my wife and we're deciding, you know, where we're going to go out to eat, and she wants Thai food and I want Mexican food, that's a persuasion process. Right. You know, we want our children to clean up their room before, you know, looking on the phone or watching a movie. That's a persuasion process. And so really persuasion is at the heart of everything that we do. And so, you know, I think selling is sort of a formalized version of that. So, you know, while I don't have any specific professional selling experience, right, I do think that, you know, I manifest many of those same skills every day in my career, right? Teaching is a selling process, right? Is a persuasion process. You know, I have to compete, you know, with a lot of other distractions for students' attention. I have to, you know, justify the value of my courses to these students and why it's useful for them as they go out into the workforce. And so it's something that we do every day, right? You know, and I actually teach the book in one of my classes, Daniel Pink's To Sell as Human, because I think it's so true. For the longest time, you know, and I think this is changing, fortunately, but the perception of salespeople has been somewhat negative, right? And I think a lot of that is due to just the belief that persuasion and manipulation are the same thing, which they're definitely not, right? Good salespeople persuade, bad salespeople manipulate. There's an erroneous belief that, oh, well, you know, if you're really smart, you would go into finance or accounting or yada, yada, yada. Sales is for the folks who, you know, just didn't quite make the grade, so to speak. And that's absolutely not true at all. In fact, you know, my research and the research of many others has shown that, you know, the ability to think quickly on your feet, to be adaptive and agile, is a critical aspect of success in sales. And you have to have a high degree of intelligence to do that. You know, and particularly to close these deals, you know, many of my students, 1 or 2 years after graduation, are closing multi-million dollar deals, right? That's not a simple thing. So you have to have a great deal of intelligence and professionalism in order to do that. So yeah, I think just generally speaking, my sort of viewpoint on selling is something that we all do, and that, like anything we all do, we can learn to be better at it, right? It's both an art and a science, right? Some people are born perhaps more persuasive than others, right? But, you know, we can learn techniques to ourselves be more persuasive.
So taking that and running with that, where do you see that coming into play with the students? What are they thinking about sales? Kind of like what you were talking about with bad salespeople manipulate. And then how are you, other than the book that you mentioned and just relaying about everybody's in sales and everything in life is sales, like how do you help them realize the value of being authentic versus maybe what they think salespeople should do?
Yeah, so we're very lucky. So we have a an excellent student body and you know, a very well-developed sales program. We've had our director of our sales center, Tony Christofik, teaching here since the 1990s, former IBM salesperson, former salesperson for Deloitte. So he just does wonderful work with the students. This year, in fact, we won the National Collegiate Sales Competition in Atlanta, Georgia. It sort of happens around the same time as March Madness, the basketball tournament. It has about the same number of schools. So I always say, you know, Dayton's a really big basketball school. It gets a lot of attention here. And I said, you know, you can talk about the basketball team until you're blue in the face, but at the end of the day, the most successful team at the university is our sales team, and it's not even close, right? So we've had a lot of success winning a lot of, you know, these sales competitions throughout the country, smaller events, and this year, for the first time, the really big event. So I've got a really great students to work with, right? And so that's something that makes my job really easy. Students are also very happy to be here, right? So we have a really great on-campus community environment. And you know, people say, well, how does that impact me as a professor, right? So you know, whether the students are happy or not, I don't care. Well, you should care, because happy students are going to be students that aren't going to complain about a quarter of a point on a quiz. They're going to be students who do what you ask them to do. They're going to be students who are easy to work with. And you know, really one of the hallmarks of our sales center, and you know, other schools do this as well too, but I think we do it perhaps better than anyone, is our ability to work directly with students, right? So the one-on-one attention that they get here is somewhat unique, because we're a private institution, we charge a price premium, and then also too, just sort of the dedication of our sales faculty. So I'm very fortunate to be here, and I'm very fortunate to work with the students that I'm working with. With regards to persuasion, right? So, you know, I think one of the things I highlight with my students is that, you know, there's that old expression, there's more than one way to skin a cat. You know, and there's different sales processes that they learn as they go through their time at the University of Dayton. You know, there's the skin selling process, there's the purposeful choreography that was really developed by the authors of the Challenger sale. So I teach them that perspective. But, you know, in doing so, one of the things I highlight is that there's multiple ways to have success, right? But the key is to be yourself. You know, do something that you're comfortable with, but then also make sure that at the end of the day, that whatever it is you're doing, you're providing value, because that's the most critical aspect. In the value analysis of major sales engagement course that I teach, you know, I sort of, with my sort of accounting finance background, I sort of, you know, have students sort of make arguments to buyers in quantifiable ways, right? So, you know, the buyer can see the actual financial value of what it is you're selling, right? So, you know, not all buyers speak that language, but you know, if you're dealing with a buyer who does, you should be able to be comfortable, you know, speaking about concepts like return on investment, net present value, total cost of ownership, things which I think, you know, a lot of salespeople of other universities aren't being taught, right? You know, because it's like, oh, well, you know, the reason I'm in sales is because I didn't want to have to do that math stuff. Well, you know, in an increasingly data-driven world, you can't get around it. You can't get away from it. Whether you want to do it or not, you have to, right? So, you know, that's something that I really focus on is, you know, being able to, you know, persuade buyers, but also understanding that buyers, you know, some, you know, want to see a quantitative presentation, others might be more receptive to narrative and storytelling and so forth, but you have to be comfortable with all those different, you know, ways of persuasion.
So where do you think that comes in with your natural tendency more on the, let's say, accounting research science side versus, you know, the sales being some combination, depending on who you talk to, of art and science, like you just said, the conversational side, but also the data driven part? Where do you think that's more powerful, like you said, of being able to go through the numbers and ROI and net present value, things like that? Yeah. And then where, you know, where, I guess, you know, where is that authentic blend of both parts that are necessary, or for somebody, whatever their strengths are and how do they succeed?
Yeah. So, you know, in the types of sales calls that my students are going to be doing typically upon graduation, you know, they're going to be meeting with a team of buyers, right? It's not, oh, okay, well, I show up at a buyer's one day and then, you know, I close the sale in 30 minutes, right? These are long sort of consultative processes. And so, you know, some of these sales processes might last 18 months to 24 months, right? Just on one deal. And so during that time, you're obviously going to be meeting with a lot of different people from the buying center. And so understanding sort of what the value drivers are for that each individual member of the buying center, you know, sort of what motivates them, sort of how they like to receive information, is something that's so important, because that's when you're going to have to use those different approaches, right? Because, you know, maybe the engineer, when the, you know, sort of hear the quantitative presentation, the financial presentation, as would perhaps somebody from accounting or finance on their end. You know, the end user might want to hear how it's going to make their life better, right? The person who might be the decision maker, maybe some executive in the company, you know, wants to know how this is going to help them achieve their larger goals, right? So understanding that different people have different things they want to hear, and different ways of taking in information, is critical, right? So you have to have all these tools in your toolbox, so to speak. So, you know, sometimes you need a hammer, sometimes you need a screwdriver. And so you have to be able to have both in the toolbox and know when to use which one.
And then how do the students take all of that? Are they excited by that? I'm assuming and or guessing, versus maybe what they think they have to do to be successful in sales. Mm-hmm. Where do you have that intersection of the students who are like, yeah, I'm here because I'm not good in math and I don't want to do the other things. I just want to show up and talk to people. Like, what do you see from your side?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a good question. So on the first day of class, I give students a simple exercise, right? So I print off a fourth grade math worksheet, and it'll have, like, you know, 9 times 8, you know, fill in the right answer, 16 divided by 4, you know, 15 plus 4, right? And I say, okay, I'm going to give you guys 10 minutes and to complete this. So go ahead and do so. And, you know, students blow right through it. And at the time that they're doing it, they're not really understanding why I'm having them do something that's seemingly so pedestrian. And I tell them, look, if you can do the four basic mathematical operations of addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division, you can do all the math that you need for this course. You can do all the math that you need to speak in a compelling way about ROI, NPV, and total cost of ownership. Now, the numbers are going to be a lot bigger, right? So you won't be able to do it in your head, but you can use Excel to do that for you, right? You can use tools to do that for you. But if you know what you need to do and know the basic process, you're going to be fine. So a lot of it's math anxiety, and I actually wrote an article about this, and that's different from not having the ability. Math anxiety is the perceived belief that I just can't do it. Well, if you have mindset going in, you're probably going to be right, right? You know, I think Henry Ford has that famous quote, whether you believe you can or you can't, you're probably right, right? So if you believe you can't do it, you probably won't be able to. But if you have the self-confidence and self-efficacy to know that, hey, you know, actually, I can do this, right? So old man Dugan, right? He's doing these examples, they seem pretty straightforward. And so, you know, if you have that mindset, then, you know, you're going to be fine.
I love it. And that is interesting, which is that what you talked about, the math anxiety, and I will make sure that we put a link in the show notes for that if it's available. But where there is that belief, there's people who just, you know, they think, oh, I don't have a mind for math. I'm not good at math. I can't do math. And it turns out they can, especially enough to do the calculations mm-hmm. needed for a sales position in helping someone see their numbers, right? It doesn't have to be overly complex, the math part of it, right? The analytical side, the logic of it, like where you're trying to get to and how you get to that, that's different. But the math itself, it's pretty easy. And I love that you're doing that exercise of, like, if you can do fourth grade math, then you can do all the most of the math you need to do to be successful in sales.
Sure. Absolutely.
And so when you talk about that with them, then where do they start embracing, let's say, authenticity and kind of their role in the sales process?
I think a lot of my students, when I get them, they're usually seniors. So, you know, they've gone mm-hmm. through the principles of selling course. Many of them also have taken our advanced selling skills course. So they've done a lot of role plays already. So mm-hmm. we have a fairly well outfitted sales center where students can film themselves doing role plays and so forth. And so when they're applying for jobs, maybe a job will ask, well, have you ever done, you know, an actual sales call before, right? And they can be like, well, not only have I done one, I've done many, and here's a catalog that you can access that kind of see me in action. So a lot of them have a pretty good idea of the sales process already by that time. You know, and I think in terms of, you know, being authentic, I think, you know, there's this bad sales stereotypes out there, right? You know, kind of the schmarmy used car salesperson. And I haven't really encountered, honestly, many students who sort of, you know, fit that stereotype. And so, you know, you can have any different kind of personality and be successful in selling. So I had a young woman actually in my class last year who, you know, was very reserved and very introverted, and it took her longer to arrive at answers than most students. She was a very good writer. She spoke kind of slowly and haltingly, which you don't normally associate with sales. And so I served as a reference for her when she was applying for jobs. And I said, you know, if she's put in a role where, you know, she can like sort of go at her own pace, right, she'll do extremely well, right? But if you try to speed her up, that may be where she struggles a little bit. And she got promoted within her first few months because the company she was working with understood what her strengths were, right? I have other sales students who at least obviously sort of, you know, kind of maybe more closely fit the stereotype of salespeople, very extroverted, you know, very sort of quick talking, good on their feet in terms of thinking and so forth and communicating. So, you know, we have all different types of students, and that's something that we highlight early on, is that, you know, you can have any number of different types of personalities, but you can all be successful at selling. And so the first thing that all our sales students do when they start in the sales program is to take the Challey assessment. And I don't know how familiar you are with this, but it was actually a company that was founded by two University of Dayton alums years ago. But it's a predictive assessment for how well you'll do in a sales role based off of your answer to a battery of seemingly unrelated questions. And, you know, and what it does too, which I think is very valuable, is it says you might be really good at an inside selling role, but maybe not as good at, you know, sort of an outside hunter type role. So it says, you know, based off of your responses to these questions, this might be the type of role that you're best suited for. And you can have success and make a lot of money in various different roles, but understanding what your skills and strengths are and sort of trying to find a position aligned with that is really important.
I love it. Well, and I think that's a perfect place for us to end this first part on the authenticity and this conversation. I love that because I think, you know, a lot of it is the strengths. A lot of it is understanding what you're good at, what you can work on that, you know, it would help you and be extra valuable, right? Mm-hmm. Not just about fixing your weaknesses, mm-hmm. but just enhancing your strengths and yeah. filling in those gaps. And I love it. You know, there really is a place. If you're not a hunter, then don't get into a hunting role just because A, you think yeah. that's what you have to do, or B, you have a friend who's a hunter and making lots of money. And so they tell you how great it is, but it's a square peg in a round hole problem. And that's yeah. not going to work. And I also love what you said about that student in the company that hired that woman, and they work towards her strengths and knew what they were getting and then knew the best way to get that person. Like, you know, Jim Collins, good to great, right? Get the right people on the bus mm-hmm. and then get the right people in the seats on the right seats in the bus. And then it's game on. So I absolutely love that. Dr. Riley, for people who want to follow up with you, want to chat with you more, get in touch. The links will be in the show notes, but you're on LinkedIn, and they can find you on there at Riley Dugan. They search for it. Again, the links will be in the show notes. And also the University of Dayton program. It starts with udayton.edu. I won't read the rest of it on there. Again, the link will be in there. You can also Google the management and marketing program and Riley Dugan. Dr. Riley, thank you for being here. And I can't wait for part two.
Thank you so much.
And for everyone that's tuning in, hopefully you found this valuable. Hopefully it helped you. I've heard the word schmarmy a few times and literally looking it up while recording this because I thought it was kind of like a joke word people throwing out there, but it's legit description of what it feels like to deal with someone who's insincere. And obviously that's why I do the show. That's why I have people like Dr. Riley on here to share what he's doing with the programs out there that change the future of sales. So thank you for being here. And as always, thank you for filling the world with authentic persuaders.